That was one of my favorite courses of the whole education. It was first, it's a course in three steps. So first it's dancing, and then it's dancing to music, and then playing for dancing. And then I loved the playing for dancing because it's kind of a masterclass. So you play solo, and then the other ones are dancing or walking to your music, and then you get feedback on your playing from a dancer's perspective. And it's so helpful. And you can it was really interesting to watch the dancers and how the way I play affects how they move to the music.
Hi, you're listening to Conversations with Musicians with Leah Roseman, which I hope inspires you through the personal stories of a fascinating diversity of musical guests. The Swedish fiddler Lena Jonsson has created a unique style inspired by traditional Swedish music, as well as many other influences. Today, we're focusing on the wonderful third album by her trio, Folk Covers, which celebrates many great folk music composers of today. I think you'll really enjoy this uplifting conversation, which features a lot of music, including Lena giving us some spontaneous house concert experiences and clips from the new album with insights into the process of curating and interpreting these folk covers. Please note the timestamps have the tune names. You'll also learn about the Swedish folk scene and regional differences, her experiences studying both in Sweden and Boston at Berkeley, her love of creative design, and how to dance a polska. I want to let you know that I'm going to be taking a short break for a couple of weeks, but I'm very excited to bring you season 6 of this podcast at the beginning of January 2026. Like all my episodes, you can watch this on my YouTube channel or listen to the podcast, and I've also linked the transcript. It's a joy to bring these inspiring episodes to you every week, and I do all the many jobs of research, production, and publicity. Have a look at the show notes of this episode, where you'll find all the links, including different ways to support this podcast.
So your beautiful new album is covers. It's not your original material.
Yeah, exactly.
So the first thing I did, you know, I'd listened to your other albums and I was familiar with your music, and I had a chance to hear you live this summer, which was so great. But then I listened to this album of covers, not knowing who you were covering or those tunes. But then afterwards, of course, I went and looked everybody up in the original versions a little bit hear. So that was so interesting to hear your stamp on it.
Yeah.
I can include clips of short clips of most of the tracks if you want to talk through the album a little bit, as well as some other stuff. Or do you want it to have less of a taste for
people? No, that'd be fun. I mean, yeah, I think that could be fun, and I can talk a little bit about the process. And
yeah, let's do that. So the first one, and I won't try to pronounce it, it comes from the unaccompanied singing tradition that you have in Sweden.
The a cappella singing called trall, where you sing with no words, but you can do it for dancing. And yeah, and it's by a band called Kongro, and the tune is called Äntligen. Finally. Emma, she wrote it when I think in the pandemic, when it was like time for the first festival after the pandemic, and she felt like finally she could see all her friends and, you know, jam and listen to great music. So
I thought for people that don't know you, it would be interesting to get to know you. So what I think we'll do is we're going to alternate a little bit about your history and past projects with this new project. Mm-hmm. And then people will hear a little bit. So your parents were fiddlers growing up, and you played for weekly dances. And they also played, was it the Bukahorn?
Yeah, Cowhorn.
So can you describe that for us?
So my dad plays the cow horn, and he plays old herding music on it. And so he would play every day before we went to school. And then I grew up like very rural area, so not so many neighbors. And then sometimes when me and my brother would be playing around in the forest, he would play on the cow horn when it was time to come back to eat, or if someone was calling or something. And then they also play fiddle, both my parents.
And I imagine there's singing tradition as well.
My parents don't really sing that much, though. Just mostly instrumental music.
Okay.
For dancing.
But in your community?
Yes, but mostly instrumental music, okay. Where kind of in jams and things like that. Yeah, it's kind of, it's different here. If I'm in England or Scotland or Ireland, it's so much more singing tradition in jamming situations. And I feel like in Sweden, it's not as much yet.
Okay. Yeah. I was reflecting on this album of yours, Folk Covers, because there's some Swedish music, but there is music from different countries. And I was thinking there's this kinship that you have with world musicians that you've brought together on this album. That's, you know, Sweden and you even have Quebecois and Scottish, you know.
I asked, when we did this album, I asked friends and that I've met and friends from a long time ago and new friends if they wanted to be a part of it. And I love old time music, and I love Quebecois music, and so it was fun to include that in this project.
So in your youth and in your community, it's Hälsingland, the part of Sweden that you're from?
Yeah, that's also where I live now.
So there was quite a bit of music. And is that still in the community, or has that been cut, some of those programs?
No, it's very thriving here now. And that's really great to see. My brother is involved in a big youth program, youth folk music program, where they have two different projects, and they have more and more teenagers that wants to take part of it every year. When I was maybe about 15, I think these programs were just starting, and it's so fun to see that they're still going, and there's so much interest. And so now there's all generations playing. So you see it at the festivals, and I think that's so great that there's not really like an age gap. So there's like 80-year-olds, 70-year-olds, 60, and all the way down to 10-year-olds playing tunes and going to these dances. And so, yeah, it's very alive here. And it's not like that everywhere in Sweden. But I think these youth programs here have been just really successful. And that's so fun to see.
And are they successful, honestly, just because they're there, or is it the way they're done?
I think it helps that there were already a lot of fiddlers in the area, and there were already dances happening and concerts happening. So there was already a community and networks and people who could play folk music. But then I think just the way that they started the program, and really they knew how the community worked. The people, the leaders, or the teachers who started it, they already had a big community. So they kind of had an idea of like, I think these teenagers would think this is fun, and they were right, and they were super inspiring, and So I think a combination.
And for yourself, having grown up in this very musical family, was it different going to play with your peers as a child? Like, did it feel more like your thing instead of like, you know, your parents were, you'd hear them play, you know what I mean?
No, it was very it's not so many people, so everybody kind of knows everybody here anyway, so it all kind of melted together, I think. But it was, I think when I went to these youth programs, it was like kind of an eye-opener to see that there were so many other people my age that were interested in this music. And it was like, wow, they're from Hudiksvall and they know the same tunes. And of course, it's fun in that age also to do something on your own, like not like following your parents to everything. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was wanted to talk a little bit about traditional Swedish fiddling, you know, as a violinist myself. So you definitely have some cool microtones and even things that change within a tune, like even the mm-hmm. ornaments. And then you have these asymmetrical beats that gives it such an interesting groove. We had talked briefly that maybe you'd be willing to play a tune.
Oh, yeah.
Since it's the beginning of the interview, would you be up
yeah,
for that?
Yeah, I can do that. I just have to go get my fiddle, okay. But... just give me a minute.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, I could play a tune maybe with some microtonality. That could be fun. Yeah, I'll play a waltz from Älvdalen. It's called Silkesvalsen.
Yeah, and just before you do that, just to explain, most people will know, but for those people that don't know, so it might sound, quote, out of tune because it's purposely using different notes.
Yeah, exactly. So in I use between, for example, let's say C and C sharp, there are three microtones. There's one that's like right between C and C sharp, and then there's one closer to C and one closer to C sharp. And then you can kind of use these different microtones depending on what you feel like in the moment, or maybe where the melody is going, if it's going up or down, and you know. So yeah, we'll see what I choose to play now. So this is Silkesvalsen.
Yeah, that was really it's really special. It's really different.
Yeah, and I love this color or texture, or I don't know the I don't find the word now, but and it just adds a special feeling that I really like. On my latest album with my trio on Elements, on I think it's the first track called Regnig Dag, I'm using a little bit of microtonality on that track.
I had notes on some of your other albums. On Stories from the Outside, track 9, Viderna Jakta, do you have a lower tuning there?
No, I think I'm playing on my 5 string.
Do you ever tune down or use different tunings on the violin?
No, not very often, actually. Sometimes I tune up just the G to an A, but yeah, it's not as common in... the tradition here in Hälsingland, and also it's more common in old time music to use open tuning, but in some parts of Sweden it's more common to do like AE or AE AC sharp or but yeah, I usually just play on standard tuning.
And you know, the very first guest I had 2021 was a nickel harpist.
Uh-huh.
And she's actually Canadian, Kirsty Money. But I'm curious in terms, does that influence the way, because you don't use vibrato, for example. So is that the way fiddlers play in Sweden? Is that influenced from the nickel harpa? Is there any connection there?
I don't think so. With the vibrato, you mean? Yeah. I've never thought about it, but I don't think so. It's just, Now, some people use a little bit of like slow vibrato to create a specific tone, but no, I don't think it's, no, it's not very common. And I've never made that connection, actually. So
somebody else had suggested that could be the case. So I was...
Oh, interesting. Well, maybe. I don't know. It was just... but I think, well, actually, like some tunes from Hälsingland and like that were very classically inspired, and like tunes in B flat and like in positions and stuff. But I think those fiddlers who played those tunes probably used vibrato because they wanted to sound more classical. But nowadays, it's not very common.
So that actually brings me, I discovered you through Brittany Haas when I was researching her for my interview with her, and I'll link that one. In your, you guys have done a couple of duo albums, but in the recent one, The Snake, there's like this Bach-inspired
set of pieces. Yes, so fun. It was so fun to write it together. It was something I've been thinking about for a long time, that I wanted to do that. But I just kind of... It was hard to start doing it on my own. Then when I was there visiting her, I asked her if she would like to try and do this thing that I've been thinking about. And she was like, yes. So then we just started and yeah, came up with new melodies as we went. And it was super fun.
Yeah, really great. Well, let's go back to the Folk Music Covers album. The second... track is a tune of the Finnish accordionist that you also play in a duo with, Johanna Juhola. I can't pronounce people's names.
Johanna Juhola.
There we go. And can you say the name of that tune?
Yeah, it's in Finnish. And it's a neljän minuutin rakkaus. What, I'm not a Finnish expert, but something like that. It means 4-minute love story.
Yeah, and she has a really charming YouTube video in her version, I noticed.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's great. That was that one was really fun, because her music isn't really like, a lot of her music is very pop or tango oriented, and the tunes are not specifically A and B part. And so when we were trying to choose which tune to take, yeah, we really think and was like, how can we do these tunes? So we couldn't really see ourselves playing it or interpret it. And then Krydda, the bass player, he heard this one. And me and Eric were like, really? He's like, yeah, this is the perfect one. And it was so far away from anything we've done before. So it was a really fun challenge. And then we just moved around all the parts, and it starts with the B part as an intro, and but it worked out in the end.
And your bass player has a jazz background?
Yeah. Yes.
So how do the collaborations work when you guys make arrangements?
For this, it's been different for the Folk Covers album and the other albums. But for the Folk Covers albums, we've listened first through the artist's catalog and try to decide together which tunes, maybe we choose between three different ones, and then everybody listens, and then we decide together which one we wanted to do. Then we've been jamming them and just maybe learning the melody first, and then trying to kind of invent ourselves in a way. I mean, because when we do my tunes and the albums that we've done in the past, then, we try to invent new ideas, and we try to break new grounds, or, whatever, be very experimental and see where the tunes can go. But then with this project, we kind of the creative process is the opposite. We have to try and invent ourselves. Like, how do we actually sound? Like, what would Lena Jonsson Trio do if this was one of our tunes? And so we just kind of try to find a groove that worked for us. And yeah, it was really interesting process. And sometimes it took very, very long, because it's, you know, all the tunes that we've chosen are already so great in their original form. So you don't want to like destroy the tune. So yeah, it was hard, but very inspiring for us as a band.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was thinking, I mean, counterintuitively, it's like more work, even though you're playing other people's compositions.
Yeah. But
even just the choosing, the curating.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And a few tunes we just, for example, the tune by Shantikorum, it's a waltz. And that was kind of the tune that we felt, oh, this is maybe closest to us, but we don't want to do it exactly as they're doing it, because it's already so great. So how can we change it? And then I was playing around with the tune, and then I thought, maybe I can try and do a polska out of this tune. So I kind of changed the groove and changed it into a polska, and then sent it to the guys and were like, what do you think about this? Do you think we can do this? And then, so that's kind of how that idea came. And yeah, and then we've just been changing the tempos or changing keys and things like that too.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear what a change it makes, even just the tempo, the whole feel of it.
Yeah.
So Shantikorum, they're actually Canadian, and I didn't know about them because I'm not so tuned into the folk scene here.
Yeah, they're great. From Quebec.
Yann Falquet, their guitarist, that's who I heard you play with.
Yeah, exactly.
And did you have that connection with him before? Because you hadn't toured in Canada before.
No, it's the first time we toured in Canada with the trio this summer. And now we've been teaching together at a music camp in Ashokan, and that's kind of how we started playing together.
Okay.
And so through mutual friends also.
Yeah, when I met you, you were going to this legendary, it was the Blue Skies Festival, right?
Yeah. We were on our way there.
I think the air was rather smoky from forest fires, if I remember, but was it a good experience?
Oh, yeah. It was an amazing festival. Really fun. And so, the area there is so beautiful. It was kind of in the forest. And as I was driving there, I was like, oh, I hope my GPS is showing me the right way. Is it really all the way in here in the forest? And then I just came there, and this whole festival area just opened up, and it was, yeah, really amazing festival. It was nice also because it was all ages, so it's lots of kids and very family oriented, and yeah, just very friendly festival and lots of great music.
Yeah, I understand, like, they own the land and it's very grassroots. I don't even think they have a website. It's just kind of word of mouth. And
I know, yeah, and they always sell out. I ask them, like, do you want me to do any promotion? And like, no, you don't really have to. We always sell out. I'm like, great.
Amazing. So yeah. Was there time to jam, or you just kind of did your shows? And
No. I mean, there was also workshops, and yeah, I think jammed a little bit with Laura Cortese, a friend of mine who was there, and yeah.
So in terms of doing workshops and teaching, like, do you have regular students, or is it more just when you do special?
I teach once a week at called Folkhögskola, which is kind of pre-college level, after high school, pre-college level schools, which is a really great school system here that we have. And so it's not, it can also be any age. And at Folkhögskolas, you can study crafts or music or dance or theater or languages and all, yeah, lots of different things. And it's really fun because it's not, you don't have to do tests and pass the courses like in colleges. That, so it's very free for the students. And I think that's great.
I had another Swedish folk musician on this podcast, and I don't think you will have crossed paths. Ida Gilner, she plays the saxophone and piano, and she's in, I'll say it wrong, but Göteborg.
Okay, yeah. Oh no, I don't know who she is.
Okay, yeah, she's she does a lot of klezmer. She's not Jewish, but she got really interested in that. Oh. And she also studied traditional Swedish folk music, and anyway, very interesting person, and she does other stuff, a lot of interesting collaborations also with Finnish tango accordion player who's Swedish but got to know her Finnish roots. Okay. Whose name I forget now, but it's I have had musicians from over 30 countries, and it's I do try to make it more international, although most people that ask tend to be like from Brooklyn. It's like this, you know?
Okay.
The center of the music world. Actually, let's talk about your time in Berkeley.
Yeah. Yes. So
you had some important mentors. You discovered some different music. What was that like for you?
Oh, it was incredible. It was such a great experience. I was there for 3 semesters. And so before that, I had studied Swedish folk music in Stockholm at the Royal Music Academy there for 3 years. And then I kind of felt why I wanted to go to Berkeley because I felt like I wanted to have more skills than just Swedish traditional music. I'll played some classical before also, but I was like, I want to work with music my whole life. I love playing music, but I think I need more tools. And I love old time. And I had some friends who had been there, and I studied with Daryl Anger and with Bruce and Matt Glaser and Rob Thomas, who is a jazz violin teacher. And it was so great. And it was very challenging because I was playing jazz and I'd never played jazz. And I mean, Swedish traditional music is very modal and the education was just very melody oriented. So this whole world of chords and improvising on chords was just totally new to me. And I was a total beginner, and it was hard in the beginning I was so limited in like what I could express in this new genre, but it was also what I really wanted. So it was a great experience. And then I also played old time with Bruce, and they had an old time ensemble there, and I just met some amazing musicians. And what was also really fun for me was that these people who were playing old time and bluegrass, they loved, for example, Väsen and a lot of Swedish traditional tunes. And like, I know a lot of traditional Swedish tunes. So it was a really fun exchange too, because I wanted to learn all the old time tunes and play in all the jams. And then I could have something to give back to that community. So that was also really fun.
Yeah, I, you know, I had Daryl Anger on this series a couple months ago, and he, you know, watched lots of his videos he's done. And there's one with you where you teach him a tune.
Oh, yeah.
It's up there on YouTube. Right.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's great.
So was it like a culture shock? I mean, how was your English at that point? Was it?
We study English here since we're 9 years old. Okay. And I'd been traveling in the U.S. before. So, yeah. So okay. I think that was fine. We had to do like English tests like the first days, and I was a little rusty. but it worked out fine.
Yeah, I was just curious about that. My older daughter, she lives in Rotterdam, and in the Netherlands, they don't start foreign languages till they're like 12, but then they learn so many.
Yeah. They know all, they're like, they know so many languages. I think here, I mean, Sweden is only 10 million people, and then you kind of have to learn another language to be able to travel anywhere except Denmark and Norway, because they would understand, but you know.
Let's go to Birdland. Canaris, it's a Scottish all-women band.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, this was one of the latest ones that we did. And it's super fast, their version. So we kind of quickly decided that we're going to slow this down. I think we played, less than half the tempo. And we kind of turned this into a Norwegian gangar. I tried to learn like Norwegian gangar bowings and doing this on these tunes, and it worked out, I hope, pretty well. And my brother is actually an amazing hardanger fiddle player, and he lives just 20 minutes away. So I went to him for some consulting on Norwegian bowings for this tune.
And how are they different?
A lot of the bowings are over the bar line, for example. Da di a guy down di a down down di a di down. For example, and also the ornaments are very different. Whereas a lot of ornaments in are hard on your fiddle. For example, if you do like A on the D string, then you ornament on the with the first finger on the A, like D. You can't really see it. But you will hear it in the tune. That's not common ornament in Swedish music. So I try to like add some Norwegian ornaments into like hardanger fiddle ornaments into the tune as well.
Did your brother live in Norway? How did he get that proficiency?
Yeah, he lived there. He worked as at a farm, and the farmer the guy who owned the farm, he was a hardanger fiddle player. So he just learned lesson and had cassette tapes that he was listening to every evening and just playing hardingfela all the time. And then now he's just playing on his own at home. There isn't really a big scene for hardingfela here, but he just played in Oslo actually, and a folk club there. So, yeah, but he's really good at hardingfela.
Yeah, have you tried it?
Yes, I'm not very good. It's really hard. It's completely different technique for a bowing, for example, and the bridge is also flatter. Because you always play on more than two strings, and you have to play like very soft with the bow, and also the tunes are much. It's very complicated and very long, and it's a different kind of build structure on the tunes. But I love it. But my brother can do it.
They use a lot of different tunings too, like the way they tune their strings, right?
Yeah, they often have more than one hardingfela in different tunings.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. In terms of Birdland, so did you know that band, the Canaris
Quintet? Canaris Quintet, yeah. I know my friend Laura Wilkie is in, or was in the band, and I've heard them, and I love their music, and they're all great musicians, and it felt fun to have, you know, and then we had like some music from North America and Scandinavia. And then it felt like Scotland was kind of in between. And it's a good good music tradition too, and that was fun.
So you mentioned going to the Stockholm Royal College of Music for Swedish traditional music. Mm-hmm. And I know over the years, you've also done a lot of work in terms of listening to archival recordings and learning specific fiddler styles. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, a lot of the times there, the process of learning a new tune would be to listen to an old archive recording and learn exactly the same, like learn exactly everything, all the bowings, all the ornaments, intonation, and everything, just copy it like right from the archive recording, and all, or from your teacher. You would record the teacher and then you would try to copy exactly the way they play. And I really loved that process. And then once you've learned the tune, then you can, you know, do what you want with it and interpret it in the way you want. But it really gave me like a deeper understanding of how to take a tune for yourself, take it to you. I don't know how to say it in English, but and then really learning it on a deeper level and then try to express the tune out from yourself after really learning it. And that was great also when I wanted to learn old time music. I felt like I really had the tools how to learn a new music tradition, because I knew how to listen to bowings, and not just like if it's up or down bow, but like what is the quality of this specific bow. I could hear like, is this a long, or like the speed of the bow, and I just like learned all those tools in Stockholm, and that really helped me to learn the groove and the style of old time. I'm not an expert in old time, but like I felt like I could learn the tunes and understand how to make it sound not like a Swedish schottische, but more like an old time tune.
In terms of your program in Stockholm, was it, I imagine it was pretty small, but maybe not, like...
Hi, just a really quick break from the episode. I wanted to let you know about some other episodes. I've linked directly to this one, which I think may interest you, with Ida Gilner, Brittany Haas, Alexis Chartrand, and Daryl Anger. In the show notes, you'll also find a link to sign up for my newsletter, where you'll get exclusive information about upcoming guests, a link for my Ko-fi page to support this project directly, where you can buy me one coffee or every month, and my podcast merchandise store with the design commission from artist Steffi Kelly. You can also review this podcast, share it with your friends, and follow on your podcast app, YouTube, and social media. All this helps spread the word. Thanks.
Yeah, it's pretty small. In my class, we were maybe eight or 10 people. But they have both Swedish traditional music, but they also have... You can also study music from other cultures, traditional music. So there was someone playing flamenco guitar or Iranian singer. And yeah, so, but most of it is Swedish traditional music.
As a young person, was it interesting going to Stockholm after growing up more in the countryside?
Yeah, I mean, it's more concerts more just... more people playing, and it was also fun to meet other, folk musicians from other parts of Sweden who just had a totally different tradition. I mean, where I'm from in Sweden, it's kind of like south of the middle, and there are some other regions close by that also has a lot of really strong tradition, like Dalarna and Jämtland, for example. They're all kind of lots of fiddlers and lots of traditional music historically and now. So I already knew some people from this area, but then like, I mean, Sweden is it's a long country, so it was fun to move there and just there are people from all over. And and also to see, I mean, everybody wasn't doing only traditional things, you know, some people were more experimental and that was kind of new to me at that time, and that was really inspiring to see.
Yeah, and I was thinking about, you know, we had started talking about how you grew up listening to traditional dances and your parents playing. So that sense of marrying the dancers' movements to the music from the very beginning must have affected your sense of groove and rhythm.
Yeah, we also learn dancing in the college because it is dance music. So the groove is always important. Yeah, that was one of my favorite courses of the whole education. It was first, it's a course in three steps. So first it's dancing, and then it's dancing to music, and then playing for dancing. And then I loved the playing for dancing because it's kind of a masterclass. So you play solo, and then the other ones are dancing or walking to your music, and then you get feedback on your playing from a dancer's perspective. And it's so helpful. And you can it was really interesting to watch the dancers and how the way I play affects how they move to the music. It was incredible and very helpful for having kind of a calm groove and see how much you can kind of pull the measures or pull the timing without, you know, they're falling over. And I think that was one of the things that helped me the most, I think. And also to shift focus from my own playing. And, you know, I'm sure you know this, like, it's so easy to get, like, very focused on, like, what's happening right here, or, you know, all the fingerings and la, 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 la. And it was just very a nice experience to just, okay, it's not so much about it's about what we're creating together. And yeah, that was really, really interesting course. And it was with Elika Frisell, who was my fiddle teacher, and then a dancer, Ami Pettersson Dregelid. Very inspiring.
Well, let's go on to Bubbles in Central Park, Dreamers Circus, rather.
Yeah. Yeah, this was also one of the first ones that we did in February 2021. I think. And well, I've known those guys for a long time and always loved their music. And so I already knew some of the tunes, but I didn't know so many tunes from this album. And yeah, we listened through a lot of their tunes, and some of it is more like ostinato oriented. Like this. but this was one of like that has had a very clear melodic, a strong melodic focus, and we really liked it. And this one, this was actually one of the hardest ones to do because it's kind of similar to their version. It is a polska, so we play it a little faster than they do, and we also have a different instrumentation, but not so much. I mean, they also have fiddle and sitar, and we have fiddle and guitar, but bass instead of piano. It was hard because we tried to reharmonize the tune, and I mean, it was like a puzzle to try and not do the same as they were doing, you know, because we don't want to copy their chords. And we just played it and wrote it out and tried to change it and arrange it in a different way. And so yeah, this was one of the hardest ones to do, but I think it was fun to turn it more into like a power polska, a little faster and like more up tempo.
Thank you.
describe the how a polska is danced to us? Like, what is that dance?
Oh, yeah. So it's a couple dance. And you walk like this. And you walk on one and three. And then first you just walk in a big circle. And then you dance on three steps around. And then you walk a little bit. And then you dance around. And then you can, there are some different variations depending on what kind of polska it is. Sometimes maybe you spin your partner a little bit and you dance like in a slower tempo backwards. And it's kind of hard to describe. What can be hard is that because there's so much rotation in the couple. So it's harder if you compare to like contra dancing, which it's more maybe inclusive at first because there is a caller and you can kind of join in because there's so many other dancers who already know and they can kind of help you. But in polska, it's like it's just you and this other dance partner. And so oftentimes you have to take maybe a polska workshop before going to the dance to just kind of learn the basic steps. But I love dancing polska. It's not very like show off dance. It's, you know, very calm and you're just dancing there with your partner. So it's maybe not so good for stage, but like Norwegian dancing, for example, it's more kind of more show off, but like Halling, for example. But yeah, I really like the dance and it's a nice dance.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, your previous album, Elements, mm-hmm. Got Best Album at Folk and World Music Award. And it's sometimes fun to see listeners' comments. You know, I'm a big fan of Bandcamp, as my listeners know. And one of the listeners was in Australia and said that they heard you on an alternative radio station there. And then they discovered the album and went to Bandcamp and bought it. So that one, but one of your other albums.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Sometimes you can see on these platforms, like the statistics or like how they analyze where your listeners are. And it's like, how do they find my music there? I've never been there. Or, you know, it's interesting how music travels. It's great.
Yeah, I find it very meaningful and, you know, such an intimate medium as a podcast, you know, to know that these people all over the world are listening and maybe discovering your music. Now, I should have asked you right away, with the way you pronounce your name, it's not quite Lena, it's Liena, like that?
It's Liena.
Liena.
But it depends like what you are saying, like when you're saying Liena. Is it like Liena Jonsson or like the melody of how you say it means different things. So it's a bit confusing, but something like Liena.
Give me some examples. I'm fascinated. What do you mean?
So if you want to say, so if someone's like calling my name, like, can you come here? They would be Liena. Or if they would maybe just present like, this is Liena Jonsson or Liena. I've never done this before, but it really, the melody of the name in Swedish shifts depending on in what context you're saying the name. So that's why it's hard to say how to pronounce it because it's different.
So the stress moves is what you're saying. Like in Spanish, it would be written with a accent over either the E or the A. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Some languages show the stress.
Okay, yeah. Maybe? Liena. Liena. Liena, Liena. It's kind of I've never really talked about this before. It's interesting.
I'm really interested in languages. I find it so interesting. I even studied Icelandic for 9 months.
Then you maybe understand a little bit of Swedish.
A tiny bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I started watching a Swedish show recently. It's about the history. It's based on the history of the first women police officers in Stockholm.
Oh,
it's on Netflix. Yeah, and this of course,
what's it called?
I have to look it up. It's some Swedish title, but it's, yeah, it's quite interesting. It's like 1958, I think.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard of this series.
Yeah.
Cool. Is it good?
I only watched the first episode. I thought it was good. It was, of course, uncomfortable, you know. Mm-hmm. The sexism was pretty horrible, but...
Yeah.
But, you have to think, how did this start, right?
Yeah.
I take it for granted that we have female police officers, but I'm sure there's still quite a bit of sexism.
Yeah, probably. Unfortunately.
Well, let's go back to... Hocktail. Actually, it's interesting because I did talk a little bit with Brittany Haass about the role of women in bluegrass, and sometimes it was a little bit gendered, or, you have to kind of stand up for yourself as a gender minority. You don't find that in your circles, like being a woman?
No, not now. Sweden is very, I think the folk scene here is very... do you say equal?
Egalitarian, equal.
Yeah. But then, and I also had great role models growing up who were female. I mean, mostly male fiddlers, but there were some females who've like gone before me and paved the way. And now it's a lot. Now there's so many female, especially fiddle players. And when I started at the college, there were more male fiddle players or students than female. But now I think it's maybe the opposite. But then there's other instruments where, there are more, maybe in like comping instruments are more male and singing more female Yeah, it's really nice to see that it just feels very equal and not an issue. And also the festivals are great at booking equal artists and making sure that there are not only like all male bands on the main stage and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've heard that the classical scene in Sweden was more like made a point of having female conductors and composers. Like in Stockholm, yeah. I heard that from a musician there.
Mm.
So back to Hocktail, such a great band. And in fact,
I love them.
Yeah. And Antilopen, I think I featured a clip of that on my podcast with Brittany, not knowing it was your tune.
Ah, nice.
So now let's talk about the cover you did.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we took one of their polskas. Maybe that was too easy for us. No, but I love Unless. It's such a beautiful melody. It's such a great tune. And I'd heard it way before we even started this project. And I actually kind of played the tune a little bit. It's so great. And but then we were like, okay, well, maybe we can we wanted to make a medley. So we put it together with the Toboganist, that's a Schottish. So we kind of put those two tunes together. And the Toboganist, I remember we just took down the tempo and try to make it sound very trad. and then with Unless, that was also hard to kind of, how are we going to make it different from their Polska version? Just tried different kinds of bowings and different ornaments. And I think maybe we played slightly faster try to rearrange it a little bit. But yeah.
Thank you.
thought it might be fun to talk a little bit about fashion and your sort of creative branding. Like, you have such a sense of style, like all your photos, and even when I saw you in person, you know, such a great outfit. Do you have like Swedish designers you wear their clothes or?
Sometimes on our latest photo shoot, I reached out to a Swedish designer on Instagram and asked if I could borrow some of her designs for the cover of this folk covers album. And yeah, she was very positive and said, yes, you can borrow whatever you want. And yeah, I think it's interesting. I've always been interested in like that side of artistry. And I, during the pandemic, I took a course on a folkhögskola in sewing and design, actually. So when I couldn't travel around playing fiddle all the time, I did that for a year, and that was really fun. And I think it like adds maybe it adds something to the music or to a show. If you go see a show, I always appreciate and like to see, and you know, if they have some sort of creative idea with their clothes, or it's not so common in folk music, but in other genres more. And yeah, I think it's fun. And when I play with Johanna Juhula, for example, she's also very interested in what do you call it, like design, or yeah, so we have a mutual interest in it, which is fun. So we always talk about what colors and we should have, or what to do for photo shoots and stuff. And it's fun to have someone else who's also interested in that.
Where did you meet her?
We met in Denmark, and we were both teaching in a in composing workshop for Danish folk musicians. And yeah, that was maybe 2021, 2020, something like that. But we've known about each other for a long time, but that was the first time we kind of met for real, and yeah, played a tune right before we had to leave. And then like a year later or something, I got a gig that for my trio, they couldn't do it. And then I asked the promoter if I maybe could come with someone else. And then he said, yes. And then I said, can I come with Johanna Juhula? And he said, I love her. Yes. And I said, I've never played together. But he was just like, it doesn't matter, it's going to be great. And then since then, we've just been playing together and doing shows.
That was a risk to admit that to him. You could have faked it.
I know, I'm too honest.
So have you played in Finland with her?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, we did a tour, and then we've done a festival too.
I was curious about the different culture, because Finland is such a different language, and I think pretty different culture than the Nordic countries. Well, the Scandinavian.
Yes and no. There's lots of tunes that are similar. I mean, they also have polskas and 16th note polskas, for example, lots of that. But we don't have tango here, for example. It's a big, and but they have a strong fiddle tradition in Finland too. And yeah, it's a really good education at Sibelius Academy in Helsinki in folk music. And I think that's kind of a similar way of teaching than in Stockholm, for example.
Let's talk about the Morgan Slatt,
Järmund Larsen Trio.
Yeah. So their version is slower, and then you have this energy.
Yeah. I love their version. I love that album. It's so great. And this is also one of the latest ones that we did. And yeah, we listened through the whole album, and there's so many great tunes. But finally we decided we were going to do Morgan Slott. And then I was kind of, because this is not very, our version is not very like Scandinavian sounding. So we wanted to speed it up, and then I was just experimenting with the melody and trying to play it like maybe a Quebec tune or more like an old time tune, or I don't know, maybe it's somewhere in between. And then we just started jamming it and trying to find a good tempo and try to get into this feel, because this is not really the style that we usually play in. So it was challenging to find this type of groove. So we had to work a lot on just like locking in to this type of groove. But I think the tune, it's interesting how well I think the tune works as, you know, in this style as well. So that was kind of a fun, it was fun to realize that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about, you know, in terms of especially all the traditional tunes, you know, so many, how you file them in your memory. You spoke a little bit about analyzing and using that analytical part of your brain, but of course there must be the intuitive side of the memory. But in terms of just remembering which tune it is, how do you do that?
I'm really bad at remembering like what tunes are called, but I sometimes I categorize them by like where their tunes are from. That can kind of help me sometimes, or like who the which fiddler it's from, for example. So like I know that I have a lot of tunes from Snickarerik, for example, or I know a lot of tunes from Elvdalen, and they're kind of like somewhere in my brain. And then also sometimes when you see someone that you have a common repertoire with, then the tunes can just kind of like just come to you, which is also very cool. Like, oh, we went to this, or if you went to a fiddle camp or something when you were younger, and then you see that teacher or you see someone you were there with, then you can like find, just out of nowhere, just remember this random tune. So yeah, I think my tune memory is pretty good. I have really bad memory otherwise, but I do somehow melodies tend to stick to my brain.
Okay. Yeah, you play a little bit with Erik, how do you say his name? Rydvall?
Yeah, Erik Rydvall.
Yeah, he has this group Nordic Lights.
Yeah, it was just a project for this festival, but we studied together at the Royal Music Academy in Stockholm. Yeah, that was a fun project. It was for the Folk Baltica Festival in Germany and Denmark. And yeah, he just put together this group of folk musicians. And we met up a few days before the festival and just worked up a repertoire together. And we'd sent some stuff before and yeah, just arranged it together. It was super fun. We have a big common repertoire together also from before.
And do you play a little nickel harpa, or have you tried?
No, I was actually thinking a few days ago, maybe I should buy a nickel harpa and try to learn.
Yeah.
But no, I don't really know how to play it. I've tried a few times, but I just find it so hard to like hold it, and it just doesn't feel very ergonomic, like, it just hurts my back. But I'm sure if you know how to do it, it's probably fine.
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, just looking at it, to me, it looks like it might be more ergonomic than the violin. But I don't know. I haven't.
Maybe I'm just holding it wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never held one.
No, it's weird because you have to like hold. I mean, I can't see my hands, but. Yeah, I just find it really hard to balance, and then you have to press the keys but like hold the instrument up, and yeah, it's just very hard.
How in terms of Swedish cultural things, one thing you're known for is this Midsummer Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Very important. Do you want to speak a little bit about that? Just
Well, it's mostly, I mean, it's maybe Sweden's biggest holiday where everybody, it's not so family oriented. Like, most people get together with their friends and have a big party. And yeah, it's not so much. And then there are always like some folk music. That is actually maybe the time where just any random Swedish person would see folk music, mm-hmm. and like folk costumes, as is at Midsummer, and they maybe don't even know that it exists all year round. So they connect folk music with Midsummer, because that's like where they've seen it growing up, or you know. So that's kind of, yeah, it's a definitely, folk music is definitely a subculture in Sweden. Mm-hmm.
So when you do your regular teaching and when you do workshops, do you teach in the same way you were taught?
Yeah, I had some really great teachers growing up, like in Spelmanslag, which is fiddle, like translates into like fiddle group. There were fiddle groups in all different levels where you learn by ear in a group, tunes, and maybe like a second harmony, and you sit there and play every week. And then there was all these youth programs, and you know, you would go to like a weekend camp or stuff, and there were so many great teachers. Gun Hedlund was my first violin teacher, and then Örjan Hansesch was teaching the fiddle group, and then this youth bands was Jonas Olsson, very inspiring. And yeah, just like watching them teach kind of taught me how to learn how to teach, I think. And then a mix of, you know, the teachers from my college also, Elika mm-hmm. Frisell and Mikael Marin, for example.
Do you think it helps you as a player to be teaching?
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, I have to analyze what I'm doing and try to hold my fiddle in the right way when I teach. Yeah. I mean, it's good to reflect on my own playing, and yeah, definitely.
And the final track on this album is by the harpist Maeve Gilchrist, Brenda's Abbey.
Yeah.
So where do you know Maeve from?
From, let's see, I probably met her when I lived in Boston first. Yeah, because she was teaching at Berkeley at the time, and then we've, you know, seen each other around, and I love her playing. She's so amazing and so inspiring. She does so many cool projects, and it seems like she always breaking new grounds, and it's very experimental. And she did this project, the Ostinato project, maybe that's what it's called, and it's just so interesting, her playing and her music and her compositions. So I it was fun to kind of try and choose. But then when we chose that track, it was also kind of that tune was the one that felt easiest for us to do. We had a few different options, but then it just felt like it would require so much arranging to do them. So this was more like a tune, and it's such a beautiful tune. So yeah, it's very pleasant to play.
You've been together for a number of years. You have that nice chemistry.
Yeah, since 2018.
And how did that come about?
Well, the first album came out 2018, and that's just kind of my solo album. I wanted to just make an album with my own compositions. That's kind of how it all started, because I'd been playing on all these different bands, And then I wanted to just have something that was just like my own album. And me and Eric had been playing together when we studied together at the college, and we've not known each other since I was in high school. And I love playing with him, and we've just been playing so much together in jams. And And then I wanted to have bass. I think maybe because I had been playing so much in the US, and where the double bass is a very common instrument in folk bands, not so common at all in Swedish bands, because the guitar usually kind of covers all. It's usually maybe two melody players, one who plays melody and one who plays a harmony, and then one person who plays chords. So the combination of guitar and bass is not common at all, but I love Krydda's playing, and we're playing together in this big folk band called Folk All In Band. So I knew him from that, and so I asked them, like, do you want to play on my album in my tunes? So we rehearsed maybe 2 or 3 days for the tunes and kind of arranged them together, and then we went to my brother's house and recorded the album. And then I think, and then I wanted to make like a release tour for the album, and you know, all these people that were like, oh yeah, great, this sounds really fun. And then we played and just enjoyed it so much, so we decided to just form or name it the Lena Jonsson Trio. And yeah, it's wonderful to play with them. I mean, they're so great. It's so nice to have a band where you just feel at home, and it's easy to play, and we have a common sense of groove and timing, and it's so fun. I'm so lucky. I feel so lucky that I get to play with them. It's really inspiring, and they're just great people and amazing musicians. So it's a true joy.
Now, the only thing we didn't really touch on is your compositions, because we were talking about the Folk Covers album. And I want to point out that people can actually buy your music. Like, I have some of it, some of your tunes. On your Bandcamp, you can get the PDFs, and at live shows, you actually have printed music, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and on my website too.
And your website, yeah. Mm-hmm. But maybe we could have a clip of one of your tunes. I don't know. Do you want to pick something? I had some sort of things written down, but...
Yeah, which ones did you have written down?
Well, I was curious, like on your Places album, track 7, Polska Brukpolkan is almost Baroque.
Kind of. Oh yeah, Brakpolskan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I can talk about Brakpolskan. So a lot of the tunes from Hälsingland, where I'm from, are inspired by Baroque music. So I have a lot of those tunes in my repertoire. I remember writing this tune. I was thinking that I wanted to write a tune like that. So I had that in the back of my head. I write tunes sometimes if I get stuck. I try to sing a little bit, or just not be like with, because I usually just have my fiddle and then I play all the time and try to figure out. But then sometimes I have to like put down the fiddle and sing and feel like where the tune wants to go. I think from just knowing so many tunes, I hope I have a sense of, you know, when a tune feels good. Like if it feels good to play, then it is usually a good tune. And sometimes, you know, you get stuck and you write something and it feels a little generic, or then you have to kind of dig a little bit and try to find tools to make it more interesting, or just throw it away and start writing something completely new. And so, but I love writing tunes. It's almost like when you are in it and you're like 100% focused, it's almost like meditation. You kind of get into this mindset, and when you're just totally focused on how this melody should go and where, what kind of feel it should have, or sometimes you see something, I see something that's inspiring me to write. Or I can play a tune that I wrote That's also kind of Baroque inspired. It's called Ispolskan, the Ice Polska. All right.
Yeah, I love that one. You have such a fun video of it on your YouTube as well.
Yeah, oh, it was so cold when we filmed it. That's my winter tune.
Well, thanks so much for this today. Was there anything I didn't ask you about you wanted to talk about?
No, I think you covered it all.
Okay, great.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Keep in mind, I've also linked directly several episodes you'll find interesting in the show notes of this one. I'll be back with Season 6 at the beginning of January 2026. Please do share this with your friends and check out episodes you may have missed at leahroseman.com. If you could buy me a coffee to support the series, that would be wonderful. I'm an independent podcaster and I really do need the help of my listeners. All the links are in the show notes. The podcast theme music was written by Nick Cold. Have a wonderful couple of weeks.